Hello everyone and welcome back to Donkey's Garage for Season 2, Episode 30, Part 1, Racing in Sao Paulo, Interlagos, Brazil. Why is this Part 1 and not just a full episode? Well, this Part 1 is going to be exclusively focused on the sprint race, sprint weekend, if you like, because it had enough action to deserve a separate episode. And I wanted to make sure that the events, the action that took place during the sprint race did not get confused or intertwined with the actual race, which will be in about 3 hours. So the sprint race, again, is a format which is a bit on the crazy side. Teams go mostly blinded into qualifying into the qualifying on Friday because you have less preparation, less free practice towards the actual weekend. So already on Friday you have that qualifying, which is the one that defines the grid for Sunday, and the sprint weekend has now been kind of encompassed exclusively on the Saturday. And the Saturday, you already have some data as to how your car is going to be doing for the sprint race, because you have the qualifying data, you have the free practice that you had, and you had also a second free practice. So you're building a bit more information, but ultimately you're still very much naked. You just have to really predict and use the data from the simulator to define the specs of your car. So what's unique about this track that perhaps makes it stand out from the rest? Well, first of all, it's home to Senna, to Ayrton Senna. Brazil has a strong tradition in Formula One. I mean, in many sports, to be honest, in football, but in Formula One with great drivers and probably with the greatest driver that's been in history, or one of the most celebrated drivers, at least, with Ayrton Senna. And the track itself, it looks very, very fun to drive. I mean, you have trucks that look fun, look interesting, but at the end of the day, you can feel that they kind of lose the excitement as you see the race. They don't give much action. They're very dull in that sense, in spite of the cool design. There's some tracks that haven't got a cool design at all, that they're just these sort of modern tracks which are a combination of 90 degree angles with long straights. I'm thinking of Russia. That was a track that was not particularly fun, but not particularly, I think, enjoyable. Abu Dhabi, unfortunately, falls in that category also. It's very nice to look at it. It's I mean, very colourful, very eventful, but at the end of the day, it's not a track that really incites action. It's more the sort of track where drivers essentially just follow one another like a nice train set of wagons in a train line. I mean, it's quite unfortunate, but it's part of the design. The tracks like Turkey, for instance, that was, I think, one of the most fun, and I mean, there was some section of the tracks that were really demanding for the drivers, that were really demanding on the cars, and made it fun. I guess it pushed more the limits, the boundaries, and created more opportunities for mistakes as opposed to these newer tracks that have, I think, more conventional designs. So yeah, Brazil, on the other hand, is very old school. It's narrow. It's got mostly grass on the side, so you get penalized should you overstep. They've added, of course, runoff areas over the years to make it more safe, but still remains very much a traditional track. Quite narrow also, so you have to be quite aggressive on your overtaking. It's not the sort of track where you is so wide that you can eventually sort of move side to side to break the slipstream, stuff like that. I mean, on the F1 game, if you really want to make a comparison that perhaps is obvious, but is what we have at hand in order to really rate tracks, it's so this sort of track that feels like a roller coaster, feels like you are on the edge all the time. I really like that track because you have a first section which is quick, which you can feel the car just kind of grasping, battling for grip. Then you have a section which is more technical, which demands very much precision on the way you place the car on this sector too. So I'm thinking you're coming out of so you are on the main straight, you've got the Senna S's, which again are very, very fun. You have to place the car very well so that you take these late apex on the first one, then on the second one, and then on the third one, you've got a nice straight there, which gives you DRS should you be within the 1 second of the driver ahead of you. Then you've got a very nice braking point, which gives you great opportunity to overtake with a 90 degree angle turn to the left. And there's a nice run of area, which has been home has hosted some nice battles, especially between Verstappen and Hamilton, I think, over the last years, between Vettel and Leclerc. I mean, it's ultimately a fun track anywhere you look at it. Then you've got this nice section where you just turn left into 1, 2, 3, 4, 4th turn. Then you are on the 5th one, which is just a rising right-hander. Then you've got the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, which is just a section where you just going from left to right, from left to right. And then you're on your almost on your last at the end of the second section, you've got the section where Massa had a very weird way of taking it, which then has been copied over the years by different drivers, where you're essentially coming out of the twisty bends and you're on the right hand side, you've got a nice run of area on your left hand side, and you've got to place half of the car on top of that over that curb for maximum traction, and then you have to stay left so that you can take the left and then the left and then the nice lefty kind of almost straight that goes all the way back to the pits. So in that section, Senna had a Massa had a weird way of taking it, but it was probably one of the best ways. I mean, he was a local, perhaps he knew better than the rest. You can see that there are different racing lines between drivers. There's some that have these more on the outer side in order to keep a higher average speed through the corner. There are all the drivers that like to go for the inside curb. I'm thinking Alonso is more on the sort of drive that keeps on the outside of the corners in order to keep a higher average speed through the corner. I think Verstappen is more more aggressive on that sense, diving into the apex and going for the curbs. Great, very fun, very, very, very good. And then, as I said, ultimately, it's so fun. It's so enjoyable to watch. It feels like an oversized go-kart track. I've always made this comparison. I mean, it just has that sort of vibe where you're just on a sequence of left and rights all the time, where they're not substantial long straights and areas where you can essentially just tune the car and twist the knobs here and there. So very, very enjoyable to watch. So I think this track being interesting, being fun, being technical, creates the perfect settings for great races. Great races, and especially the sprint race perhaps is the ideal situation here, because you've got a shorter race length, which then ultimately incites the drivers to be driving 100% out from the start, from lights out, and you're just driving over a course of 20, 25 laps, and essentially just going full out from the beginning in a track which is demanding. So you're going to be creating action. I think that's ultimately the key to take away. The qualifying for the sprint was a bit different, I would say, than the qualifying on Friday for the race. Probably teams learned some data overnight that they used. That could be a possibility. Also, I think the settings on Friday were quite particularly with the rain. I mean, torrential rain that was coming over the track and eventually caused the red flag on Q3, which I will explain in greater detail later. But leaving that aside, the sprint grid was Norris taking pole. Very, very good. Just over 40... he was ahead of Verstappen for absolutely nothing. 0.040. I mean, absolutely nothing. It shows how tight the pack is at the moment. I think Red Bull are starting to lose some of the competitive advantage, at least relatively. We'll see that during the sprint race they still had the action button, and when they press it, things do change. But ultimately, Norris was in pole position, then Verstappen, then Perez with a great qualifying and close to his teammate. So more where we want to see him as opposed to qualifying really at the back and sacrificing already the race from the start, because he's placing himself in a position where he's already exposed to accidents, to incidents. Then Lewis in fifth position, Russell in fourth, Hamilton in fifth. Both Mercedes not as good as I think they had in mind. I mean, Mercedes had been very successful in the past, especially in 2021, 2022, winning both races. And it's just they were competitive, but they were not as competitive as they had imagined. Hamilton looked a bit disappointed, and I think he was coming from a couple of races where the W14 was on fire, and here he seemed to be looking at the car and saying, "You are not the same, my dear." Then Tsunoda qualified sixth with the AlphaTauri. Absolutely stunning performance by the Japanese driver, who gets a lot of bad publicity in general for being hot-headed, for not delivering, for overdriving where he's in a position to get great points, and ultimately throwing everything out of the window. Then Leclerc with Charles seventh, and followed by Ricciardo, very close these two. Ferrari showing, I think, a different approach to everyone else. They don't really put much energy into the sprint race, because of course you're using tires, you're using the engine, and ultimately you're not getting too many points. They did say that this was their approach. I think it's more or less in tune with Red Bull's approach. They do of course make the most to win the sprint race, but they are not that keen on it. I understand it. I wouldn't, as a team principal, if I had to allocate resources, I wouldn't put everything on Sunday, knowing that ultimately what really matters and where you get the points, the big points, are on Sunday, and the risk is relatively high on Saturday with the sprint race, because if you do actually overstep and have an accident, you're very likely sacrificing your weekend, overall weekend. So not a situation you want to really get. Makes sense. Ultimately, smaller teams, I think they have a different approach to it. It's their opportunity to shine, especially where the bigger teams are focused on Sundays. The smaller teams can I think, in a way, step in where in this vacuum that that has been left by the bigger teams and say, oh, this is my opportunity, let's try to get some small points, some TV time, some shine, some spotlight, and it was ultimately a deal. I mean, it's some get out of the stage in order to let others have the spotlights for about 20 laps. Ultimately, it's great. It's a great trade. Ricciardo qualified 8th, very close again with the AlphaTauri, showing ultimately a stunning performance. It seems that they are on steroids because they were coming back from the back of the field only 3 or 4 races ago, and suddenly they seem to be in really good shape. They're fighting neck to neck with even Mercedes during the race. Admittedly, of course, Hamilton had some tire degradation that was becoming critical. But still, I mean, really good result by the AlphaTauri team, with two drivers that they are delivering. Tsunoda that is stepping up. He's not letting himself be harassed by Ricciardo, who's a driver with a greater amount of experience. I would imagine they trust him a bit more in terms of his feedback, because I mean, he's been part of the Haas for longer, he's experienced, he's shown that he can win Grand Prix, etc. Carlos Sainz 9th with the Ferrari. I think here is the clear example. Sainz, he decided, I think, from the start to really take a conservative approach to this sprint race. He was, of course, doing his best, but he was not really giving 100% of what the car has. He didn't want to overuse the tires. He didn't want to overuse the engine. He just wanted to get it over with and really focus on Sunday. That's how I see it. But I am sure that people will say he's just not good enough and he's just lagging. I mean, I mentioned it last week. Some tifosi seem to be really blinded with Carlos, saying that he's ultimately the worse than Leclerc's driver as a driver. I mean, I disagree. I think that ultimately when it matters, he's able to put everything together. He's colder, he's more brain oriented to the way he understands the races, but he shows to have a better understanding of the races than Leclerc does, and perhaps this would be an argument. He doesn't want to sacrifice Sunday for the sake of winning a few points on Saturday, unless Ferrari would be easily on pole or on top three, and they could easily do this. But given it's not the case, why bother overdoing it and creating the situation where you would have an accident and you would sacrifice parts of the car where you would, like Ocon did during the qualifying to the sprint. Then Piastri top 10. I think counter performance, given that Lando took pole positions and his teammate Piastri is P10. Clearly one felt better on the car than the other. It happens, but here Piastri did not fully deliver. He didn't seem quite comfortable at all, neither during the sprint qualifying nor at during the race itself, the sprint race. So I think it is quite logical in that sense. You can see it. Now, the essential point I have to mention is the accident between Ocon and Alonso. This is turn 3, right in the middle of the Senna SS. Ocon was on a qualifying lap, I would imagine. He was coming quite heated, quite fast. Alonso found himself on turn 3, and he was more or less the middle to the right-hand side. So I would say mostly out of the way of the racing line. Ocon somehow came like a bullet through the S's. Allegedly didn't lose the car, but I beg to differ. And as you go over the last section of the Senna S's, you are essentially going on a left turn. You're taking most of the curb and then you're running wide towards the big straight that follows. He was coming a bit too hard from the second turn of the Senna S's. So your front tires are overheating, you're a bit losing grip, the car is shaking and you suddenly have a bit of oversteer, you have to correct, and then you go over the curbs on all that are placed on the inside of turn three. He was, I think, almost losing the car and clearly didn't measure, in my opinion, where he was placing the car, with the result that as he did that, he found that Alonso was there and essentially just bumped against Alonso. He took the front axle of Alonso's Aston Martin, the suspension. Alonso had a puncture, of course, quite a brutal shock accident. And then Ocon, as a result, went straight to the barriers and broke most of his, I mean, shattered his car to pieces, gearbox, side pods, rear wing, you name it. Now, surprisingly, the thing is, Ocon argues that it was Alonso's fault, that he was on the racing line and that he shouldn't have been there. Alonso didn't really get into any pointless, I would say, discussion with the media or defense, because ultimately he knows Ocon and he's got a very bad track record in general with regards to causing accidents. He was the author of a significant accident in the same turn in Brazil with Verstappen, when he was unlapping himself and he took out Verstappen, who was leading the race, something that Verstappen did not really appreciate and led to a heated discussion between the two drivers. And ultimately Verstappen used his hands to explain his frustration. Today, or rather just today, another accident caused by Ocon, in my opinion, reckless driving. The FIA took the approach of neither finding fault in one driver or another. I think it's quite strange from the FIA to take this approach. It seems that they are scared of punishing. I mean, they generally are so vocal and so strict about it, giving 10 seconds and great penalties and blah, blah, blah. And here, suddenly, they don't want to upset the field. I mean, one of the two drivers was at fault, in my opinion, Ocon. But one of the two was at fault. I mean, it's not a racing incident. It's not something that, oh, it just happens. Sorry about that. Next time you've learned. Doesn't really look like this sort of situation that warrants this sort of reasoning. But the FIA does definitely have some strange ways of resolving issues. Sometimes they are very strict, sometimes they are very passive. There is really little consistency in this body. Now, in the race itself, we have to mention a stunning start by Verstappen. absolutely a 10 out of 10. What can you say? Ultimately, he's shown to be aggressive. He's shown to be a driver definitely worth the three titles that he currently has. He's just aggressive. He's just... he shows the character. I mean, I don't know what's the word to describe him. Off the line, Lando was very conservative. Instead of really diving the car to the left-hand side to block Verstappen, he went a bit more conservative. And, well, he kind of started moving the car leftwards, but then he didn't really commit to it, and Verstappen saw the opportunity and seized it. The lesson to take away, I think, is twofold. On the one hand, you do not concede to Verstappen, because he will absolutely materialize the benefit you've given him. He will not just stand there and say, "Oh, thank you, but I will pass you next on the next lap." That's not the case. Second lesson to draw from this is that when you are on a fight with Verstappen, drivers do not react the same way. If you're fighting Perez, if you're fighting Russell, I mean, you more or less act aggressively, or you do that, or you do this. But when you're with Verstappen, you know that he's going to commit to it, that he is going to go full committed to his maneuver. And as a result, you are a bit more conservative in the way you defend, because you know that Verstappen has usually no trouble crashing. This was true in the past. Nowadays, he's a bit more cold-headed. But in the past, he was absolutely nuts. If he had to crash, too bad, get out of my way, you should have been there. Nowadays, he's more conservative, but still, it's Verstappen. He has a reputation, and drivers do not want to risk it. The second thing that we learned during this sprint race was that Perez, although he had a poor start off the line, he lost a position to Russell. He had a very good race overall. He overtook Russell. He had to fight for it, because Russell is a difficult driver to overtake. He doesn't give you an easy life in that sense. But still did it. Clean, absolutely great pass in the end. On the straight, he learned the mistake on this first attempt, where Russell was able to unlap himself. Perez learned, went for Lando, and he had a good race. I believe. No, I'm not actually being. Okay, let me recap. Perez overtook Russell at the start. He didn't actually catch Lando. That was my mistake. But other than that, pretty good race by Perez. Even Christian Horner mentioned it at some point during an interview, that he had a good race. Russell, the two Mercedes were a bit dull. They didn't show much pace. Russell had a calm race after Perez overtook him. He didn't really have an opponent. Leclerc with the Ferrari, he was struggling, stayed fifth, but he had Tsunoda really close to him during the whole time. Tsunoda was pressuring him. Hamilton was running right behind Russell for most of the race, but during the last four or five laps, he lost his tires, and then he got overtook by Leclerc and Tsunoda. quite unfortunate, but it does happen. He didn't look very comfortable. Tsunoda, really good race. I mean, you've got to give it to this man. He overtook Hamilton fair and square. He did it with an AlphaTauri. He gets all usually quite a bad press, as I said, for being hot-headed and so on and so on. But here he showed that he's stepping up, that he's maturing, that he's absolutely becoming a better driver. Hamilton struggling, as I said. Sainz struggling a lot. He kind of created a sort of queue that kind of stopped five drivers, that he was holding five drivers behind him, four drivers, sorry, with Ricciardo, Piastri, Fernando and Stroll. I mean, these four guys, five guys, they were within just a camera shot. I mean, they were essentially running one after the other. Sainz was holding the whole pack. Just, I mean, Tsunoda even overtook Sainz. Sainz was not comfortable. You could see him. He was not pushing the tires. He was trying to just to get through the race. Which, I mean, yeah, Ricciardo, good race by Ricciardo, absolutely stunning race. He was aggressive again. He showed that he was comfortable with the car, very good. He overtook Piastri in a, I think, daring move. Great, really good to see him. Piastri, he was the driver perhaps of the group that was looking to struggling a bit more. He was not comfortable with McLaren compared to his teammate. Just very difficult on track. He got overtaken by Ricciardo, and if you had given Fernando Alonso a couple of laps, he would have got overtaken by Fernando and probably Stroll too. So not great feeling for Piastri. Fernando Alonso was starting 15th because of the accident he had with Ocon during the qualifying to the sprint race. He was unable to take part in Q2, so he just got stuck in P15, followed by P16 with Ocon at the start, and Stroll was actually coming all the way from the back, P17, and they actually both did a great, great, great race. The car was showing potential, it was showing some pace. Really good. Fernando, he was able to get past the two Haas at the beginning of the race, got past to reach P11. He was comfortable. You could see him, that the car was not shaky, the car was stable, the car was there. He was giving him confidence. Stroll also did an amazing race. He was able to overtake Ocon himself. He left the two Alpines behind, relegated to the back. So really good result by these two Aston Martins, who have had a very difficult couple of past races. So they claim that they have learned some of the mistakes. They brought a very strange package here to Brazil with a mix of old and new Arab aspects. So God knows, but it seems that it's working. That at least is counterbalancing or minimizing the damages that they had during the American and Mexico Grand Prix. With that said, just to recap, I just want to insist that this track makes one of the best settings for racing. We had 20 laps of absolute perfection of racing, of real racing, with five drivers, Sainz, Ricciardo, Piastri, Fernando and Stroll running just within a pack, with Leclerc, Tsunoda being just very tight, being demanding of all the drivers to be just perfect. And ultimately, that's what you want to see. You want to see real racing, hard racing, because we did see some hard racing. Fernando Alonso overtaking Gasly, that was difficult. He was not making any presence to the, and making it easy to Fernando, but still Fernando was able to really put everything together. Ricciardo again, he was not being able to overtake Piastri at the beginning, but then he was able, he was aggressive. It showed real racing on track, and that's what we want to see. I mean, yeah, I don't want to see just cars following one another. I don't want to see team orders. I don't want to see FIA orders. I want to see drivers driving full out on track and showing why they are the best drivers in the world and showing it really with their skills. Verstappen ultimately continues to be unbeatable with a car and himself. I mean, it's a match made in heaven, on using Queen's words. Really, really amazing. You could have hoped that the situation with Red Bull, the benefit of the car that they have, that is much better than the rest, was going to shrink throughout the year. And at least if you look at the qualifyings, they seem to be closer and closer, especially with McLaren that seemed to be very, very close with Red Bull. Even if you push it to the limit, they're able to be faster, or at least on a lapped time. But when Max Verstappen is driving, you can see that for the first 10 laps, Max was driving on a relaxed, easy mode. I mean, he was just 1.5 seconds ahead of Lando. And at some point, the pit said, hey, Lando is diminishing the gap to you. We need to step it up. And they pushed the button, which enables the full potential of the car. And then suddenly, within 5 laps, he was 7-8 seconds ahead of Lando. So it shows that the Red Bull continues to be far, far ahead of the rest, in spite of a potential leveling of the field. But they continue to be ahead. We should not lie to each other on that point, on that sense, on that level. With that said, thank you very much for everyone for listening to this small episode. I mean, relatively long episode, but on this part one of the Brazil sprint race, which I really wanted to make just to really leave things on the side and don't confuse them with the actual race on Sunday. I will be back later with another episode 30 part 2. Thank you very much for listening, and as always, don't forget to subscribe, to share, and to leave a comment if you like.